You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and he says what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we preview this weekend's SummerSlam pay-per-view, the biggest show of the summer. And this is a special one, as it's the 25th anniversary of the show. And my name is David, and I'm joined today by my good friend Alex. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing very well, David.
Now, we have a lot of great wrestling to discuss on today's show, but Alex, before we get started, the wrestling world said goodbye to a true legend this past week, Red Bastion, and we want to send our best wishes to his family and send our condolences to everyone who knew him. By all accounts, a wonderful guy.
David, did you have an opportunity to meet him at the Cauliflower Alley Club? Because I know he was an active member.
I did not, actually, no.
You know, he had influences up and down. He was an influence on Conan and Michael Modest, to name a couple of names. He actually was at the King of Indies 2001, which I had referenced in a column I wrote about Ring of Honor. Mm-hmm. And he was very appreciative of the Brian Danielsons and Spankies in particular, a lot of the newer talent, which a lot of the older wrestlers aren't always as open to the new stars.
Yeah.
So everything I hear about him is extremely positive.
Yeah, so again, it was a sad day, you know, to learn about the passing of Red Bastion, but we do send our best to his entire family. Should we move on, Alex?
Let's ring the bell.
World Wrestling Entertainment. It's time for SummerSlam this weekend, and it's a show highlighted by Brock Lesnar versus Triple H. Alex, do you like how they added HBK to the match build here? Did they do enough to make this worthy of a SummerSlam main event?
Answer your first question, yes. I think it's always nice when we see Shawn Michaels. He was an incredible performer, and it seemed like most of the things that he was in was always very interesting. But I'm not excited at all for this main event. It seems like they put two names together, and they got real creative with the story, and it kind of lost my interest. How are you feeling going into this, David?
Well, I guess we're both calling it the main event. Is it technically the main event, or is the triple threat match for CM Punk's title the main event? Because remember, there was all that kind of stir-up about CM Punk wanting to be the headliner.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is the biggest match on the show. I feel like it's definitely gotten the most amount of time on the Raws building up this pay-per-view. So I would call this match the main event. It seems like SummerSlam is being sold on this match, and Brock Lesnar's on the poster, which isn't always indicative of the main event, but I believe in this case it is.
Yeah, I think it's a suitable main event, and I like the fact that HBK was inserted here towards the end. I kind of wish, though, that they wouldn't have broken his arm in, you know, this past week, and I kind of just wanted him in the corner of Triple H. Do you think this opens the door for The Undertaker to get involved here now, building towards maybe WrestleMania 29?
You know, what's interesting is I haven't heard the name Undertaker, but I've heard the name actually Shawn Michaels, who may use this as the genesis of some kind of involvement in WrestleMania 29 as well. So this may not be a door closing as much as a door opening into what happened in the future. You know, this match looked interesting on paper, and the television has definitely burned out my interest, and I think that's the bigger point, is that they got really creative with this feud, and I didn't really think it needed to be.
I do really think the match itself will be intense with Brock Lesnar and Triple H, so I'm looking forward to that. The one thing that is really confusing to me, though, is why they brought Brock Lesnar back right after the whole huge Rock Cena match. I just feel like the emotion of the WWE didn't need that at the time. There was still a lot of WrestleMania 28 stuff to deal with. And then to have him come back at the first pay-per-view, Extreme Rules, and lose. I just don't understand that booking.
It was kind of a wait-and-see type deal. And then I think months later we've seen that it kind of did have an effect on Brock Lesnar. He certainly doesn't feel as special, and John Cena doesn't feel any more special for beating Brock Lesnar. So, you know, I was very excited when I saw Brock debut return on Raw. He was a huge name in UFC, and, you know, it's kind of fallen flat. And I think this is just a continuation of it. Not really, again, I guess I'll say I'm not really excited for this match on Sunday.
Is his UFC history helping him or hurting him? Because I like him, and I respect the fact he was champion, but I did see him get his lights punched out, and that makes him a little bit less the baddest dude on the planet.
You know what? I think that he was a big star and headlined a lot of big shows, and I think wrestling fans were ready to see him come back. I mean, Brock could have come back seemingly at any point, and if he would have come back after failing with the Minnesota Vikings or a short tenure in New Japan, he wouldn't have been as big of a deal. But coming back in the UFC, and he did have a lot of success there, David, I think the fans are ready for him to come back.
Alberto Del Rio is once again challenging for the world championship this weekend against Sheamus. Was it a good idea to kind of flip-flop the storyline like this? Alex, I was excited about this match because I like what they're doing with Alberto Del Rio and that his character is a bit more serious now, a little bit harder edge to him. And I do like him. I think he's a very good wrestler. I like the fact that Sheamus has been champion for a while. I didn't need the whole flip-flop back and forth. Although I will say, I like Booker T as the general manager of SmackDown much more than I liked him as the commentator. So in that regard, it was okay how he was kind of making decisions about this.
You know, what's interesting is we've seen this heelish side of Alberto Del Rio before. I remember, I believe it was last year when he was in his feud with Big Show, we saw this come out, and I think it's a very effective device with Alberto Del Rio because he's someone you can take seriously as a heel. Because he kind of does get dirty, doesn't he, David? You know, if you cross Alberto, he's likely to snap your arm or do something to kind of incapacitate you. You know, I could have done without the car angle on Raw. I thought that was ineffective, and I don't think it's ever smart to say, you know, we're not doing the world title match 1 week before the show. But you know what, David, as uninterested as I am in the main event, I'm kind of interested for this match. I can't remember the last two times these guys have wrestled, and it seems like a fresh matchup. I'm kind of interested in it, David, I must admit.
Do you think that part of that interest may be the stability of the championships right now? I feel that WWE has done a nice job in not just hot-shotting titles every week. Sheamus has been champion for a while. CM Punk's been champion for a while. So it does make these title matches feel a bit more important.
You know what, David, I think that's definitely part of it. And I will say for the Raw main event, I don't think that's a factor at all. But in this one, yes. I mean, Sheamus has been the heavyweight champion for a while, and Alberto Del Rio is always a serious contender. And when he does, you know, the serious angles like he did on SmackDown, that's more along the lines of what I'm interested in professional wrestling. I don't want to hear very well-articulated conversations between two men. I want to hear two guys who are ready to fight, and that's kind of what we're getting out of Alberto and Sheamus.
Who do you think wins this match on Sunday?
I think Sheamus should retain the title and continue to defend it. I don't feel like it's really time to take the title off of him as of yet.
Well, one person we won't be seeing at SummerSlam is AW, Abraham Washington. Will the WWE miss his ad-lib skills? I'm going to miss him, Alex. I always thought he was a true talent. I liked him. I thought he was funny. I thought he was clever. And I think it's a bit hypocritical that they mic the guy outside his matches and then boot him for some things he said or some Twitter remarks, because what they were essentially doing is saying, AW, we want you to say something interesting, and while it may have been in bad taste, no one's arguing that, I felt maybe a warning would have been better served here than to just put him on the street.
AW, when he was going on his Twitter rant, one of the things he referred to is Roddy Piper. And if you look back at early 80s footage of Roddy Piper when he first came into World Wrestling Federation, he was very controversial. He used a lot of racist remarks. And unfortunately, Abraham Washington is not in that era of professional wrestling. Currently, Vince McMahon's wife is running for the Senate spot in the state of Connecticut. And also, World Wrestling Entertainment is a publicly traded company with a lot of very high investors. You can't make comments like that on the television. And as, you know, I thought the joke was incredibly lame and kind of tame-ish, I guess, but I could see how it would be offensive. But unfortunately, in that climate, you can't make remarks like that.
Yeah, and I agree. I thought the joke was incredibly lame as well. I guess the problem is when you're on television, you're representing not only yourself, you're representing the company, correct?
Absolutely. And, I mean, in professional wrestling, there's other ways to get heat than saying something that can be looked at as controversial. I mean, for example, we just went over in the last segment, I was a big fan of what Alberto Del Rio did with the whole security guards jumping Sheamus angle, and I believe that that, you know, kind of helps his heel persona. I mean, Abraham Washington is just developing himself. He should rely on improving his skill set. I mean, David, how many times on this radio show did we say he needs to say more or he could do so much with this role? We never said that he should go out there and do controversial statements. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It is a really fascinating thing, though, that Vince basically turned his company around with the Attitude Era, going to a different style of programming, which really pushed the limits. And here now we're using words like upstanding, you know, to describe wrestling programming. It's really fascinating to me. The one shame of it in terms of character development, because we could argue whether AEW should have been fired and whether the joke was lame, etc. But I do feel like the primetime players have been diminished a bit. I feel like they're a little less important now.
You know, to your first point, is yes, World Wrestling Entertainment during the Attitude Era was very edgy, was very risque. But the thing was is that underneath all that risqueness, there was some very tightly and eloquently put programs like the Steve Austin, Vince McMahon program. They were running a very tight ship and very good programs every week. And yes, unfortunately, this has taken the edge off the primetime players. They're kind of just a tag team act without AW. Not really anything interesting, in my opinion. Antonio Cesaro is set to challenge Santino Marella for the United States Championship on the YouTube pre-show. What are your thoughts on Antonio challenging for the title, considering his last match was a loss against Christian? I think it's a popular topic all over wrestling shows, wrestling radio shows, wrestling podcast is the devaluation of the United States and Intercontinental title, David, and the tag team titles. But it's simple things like when your challenger's going up for the belt, how about he doesn't lose a match for a month? I mean, they're able to find guys for Ryback to be. Why can't they do the same thing for challengers for these belts? And in this example, Antonio Cesaro.
Oh, yeah, this seems like it was thrown together in the last minute without a lot of thought because you're absolutely right. Why not just have him on SmackDown, win a few matches, and then this would be fine? So my question's twofold back to you, though. Do you feel that, yes, this diminishes the title because the challenger lost, but also because you're defending it on a pre-show?
Well, you know, the pre-show doesn't really bother me as much because it's, you know, a lot of people are going to be able to see this match theoretically. Probably more people will see the show on pay-per-view than YouTube. But I have no problem with the secondary titles being defended on YouTube or even on television. I think you should be a little bit more stringent with when your titles are defended. But what's interesting is that Antonio Cesaro is beating Santino Marella 2 weeks in a row on SmackDown. And then the third week he wrestled Christian and lost. So, you know, they were building a good program with Santino and Antonio Cesaro. Then up in the middle of it, they had him lose to Christian for seemingly no reason. And then Christian on Monday loses to Damian Sandow. So a little bit of thought and foresight, I guess, could have made this a little bit more interesting.
That's a great point about Christian then on Monday losing. I have no idea what they're doing with him.
You know, I mean, unfortunately, he's kind of like a Dolph Ziggler. He's a very effective wrestler. He's very good in the ring. And sometimes when they don't have a program for you, they like you to go out there and make guys look good. And in that case, you lose. And, you know, it was the role we've seen Dolph Ziggler in for a while. And now it seems like they're transitioning him to something else. And it's currently the role Christian is in. They respect him as a a proficient professional wrestler who can make other guys look good, but unfortunately they have nothing for him, so he's going to lose a lot.
Are you all right with this Antonio Exana pairing? I feel like that's completely random and makes no sense.
Exana had a lot of equity on SmackDown. She was there for a long period of time. I don't want to unquote a time because I'll probably get it wrong. But she was involved in a very interesting Teddy Long storyline,
yes.
The love relationship that went sour. And her with Antonio, Antonio, if he came in here as a fresh character, I don't think the fans would take to him. But because he's with a character that has some equity on that show, I definitely don't think it hurts him. The Piper's Pit segment on Raw was terrible. Why was The Miz even involved? Is this what the Dolph Jericho program needed? You know, what's interesting is that this Dolph Ziggler-Chris Jericho program, when I look at it in my mind, it seems like one of the more interesting programs on SummerSlam. You have the aging veteran who's ready to hand off the ball. I mean, he's already announced that he's going on tour with Fozzy, and it looks like his outside-the-ring interests are going to become more and more of the priority against Dolph Ziggler, the young gun who's ready to carry the company into the future. And that's not what we've exactly gotten. You know, it's almost like this terrible Piper's Pit segment kind of made me less interested in this match, and I was really interested in this match going to SummerSlam. What were your thoughts, David?
Alex, I thought that the Piper's Pit segment was horrendous because this is not the Piper's Pit we grew up watching. I mean, this is not how I want to remember Rowdy Roddy Piper anymore. This needs to go away. It's not edgy. He's lost his, I don't know what, spirit? I mean, the edginess, the spirit, the craziness that he used to perform with. I love Rowdy Roddy Piper. I just don't need to see him on Monday Night Raw ever again. They promote these things like, oh my God, Piper's back tonight with another Raw Piper's Pit. It's just really not well done anymore. And then they do this crazy thing where, like, you get to tweet in who you think the guest is going to be. Well, whatever people tweet in, they're just going to change the order of these three guys coming to the ring, right?
And that's what it seems like.
I mean, I don't think that those tweets make any difference at all. They were going to end up with those three guys in the ring to build both matches for SummerSlam. I do think that the Jericho-Dolph Ziggler match is a better spot for Dolph Ziggler than, like, Rey Mysterio randomly challenging for the Intercontinental title against The Miz. I mean, that to me is such a throwaway match. It makes no sense. I don't have any interest in that. You talk about diminishing titles. Is that an important Intercontinental title match?
No, it's kind of a, hey, Miz has nothing to do and Rey Mysterio has nothing to do. Let's put these two guys on the show.
Yep.
And what's interesting is I think the Piper's Pit can still be used effectively in 2012. I mean, we've seen it a couple of times where Piper, who's an excellent promo guy, can go in and clean up some of the issues between these two. And I thought Dolph and Jericho were two of the perfect people to have. But Miz was just inserted. That kind of took away a lot of the steam for me. And Jericho and Dolph weren't able to properly articulate kind of their thoughts going into the match.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you. I just don't think Piper's very good anymore on the mic. I think he looks old and slow and he's not witty anymore. And so, and I wasn't crazy about Vicky coming out, and it kind of slowed the segment felt so slow to me and just uninteresting.
You know what? I think that was kind of intended, though. I mean, this week's edition of Raw was kind of let's slow and draw the nothing we have out, and it made for, in my opinion, the worst of the three-hour shows they've had. CM Punk's lack of a heel turn is leaving me scratching my head as I become less interested in the main program on Raw. Can you explain what this character is trying to accomplish? Literally, I think on Monday Night Raw every week, we're seeing the death of the character of CM Punk, and that's a little extreme, and I don't mean that. But, I mean, in some ways, I kind of do, because as long as CM Punk is kind of in this in-between, I'm a good guy, I'm a bad guy, he's killing the fans' interest in his character, in my opinion. I mean, do the fans root him or cheer him? Or I think all they're doing is becoming less interested in him. What are your thoughts, David, on CM Punk's character, what he's exhibiting?
It's confusing. I agree. I don't know. I made a note here because I knew we were going to talk about this tonight, and I just think back to July of last year, when they had a chance, I thought, to blow the roof off the wrestling industry with the type of storyline and the right guy for it to really do amazingly creative things. And I think they missed the target wide right on that. I mean, CM Punk is no doubt a fantastic wrestler, a worthy champion, and a very interesting character on Monday Night Raw. But he's just now one of the other characters. He doesn't, to me, carry the show. He doesn't, to me, stand out as a guy that's transcendent with an amazing storyline. He's now going into SummerSlam, defending his title in a three-way match against Big Show and Cena. And this could be Extreme Rules, Money in the Bank. It could be, you know, bragging rights or any other pay-per-views they throw out there. Nothing feels special about this match at all. I respect Big Show. I don't need Big Show in title matches anymore.
You know what's interesting, David, is that CM Punk last summer kind of became what they always wanted Randy Orton to be. CM Punk was media savvy enough to where he could go on the Jimmy Kimmel Live show or any of the other talk shows and be a very good guest. He was also controversial and edgy enough on his Twitter, where recently he made remarks about the 205-pound champion of the UFC, John Jones, and he got a lot of media pub for that. He's kind of that edgy guy who you can trust to go out there and do media, kind of like what the company had envisioned for Randy Orton, but he never became. And, yes, definitely, he's definitely lost a ton of steam from last year. And whatever steam he had left in the engine, it seems like they're trying to suck it out by doing this tweener thing, which, you know, a lot of people talk about tweeners, and all tweener means to me is that you're not a good heel or a good baby face. And to tell a good story, you have to have a good heel and a good baby face.
Are they afraid to lose their number one or two face of the company? You know, he was so popular that if something would happen to Cena, you know, boy, they'd be really scratching their heads over the depth of the roster. Are they just afraid to do a full turn heel here?
You know what, David, like I said last week, you have to be incredibly afraid to lose Cena, but you're not going to have a wrestling renaissance until Cena's gone. I mean, historically, we look back, the business didn't change until WWF lost Hogan, until they lost Shawn Michaels, and until they lost Steve Austin. Ultimately, they're going to have to lose Cena, and that way a guy can finally take over and be the new top guy.
Wild card topic number one. Does Ashley Flair have a brighter future than David or Reed Flair? Will she eventually make a mark in the Divas division? Well, who knows, but I don't think FCW has a great track record, Alex, at developing key female talent. I mean, I think that AJ certainly is an exception, but AJ's not making her mark as a wrestler. It's as what has become a very fascinating on-screen character. I don't have huge hopes for Ashley Flair. Am I wrong? Is she going to be the Ric Flair prodigy that is the next generation superstar?
I think the chances are not very high of this. And you bring up the name David Flair. David Flair was a push performer during the peak of professional wrestling.
Yep.
I mean, while David Flair may not have the equity of being this incredible performer, David Flair is a name we're always going to remember. Sure. Him and Crowbar and Daphne. Unfortunately, Ashley Flair, or her new name Charlotte in FCW, which they're rebranding to NXT as we speak, unfortunately, the climate isn't available that, you know, she joins just a roster of second-generation wrestlers. Shawn Diaz is down there, who happens to be Vicky and Eddie's daughter. Lacey Von Erich spent time down there, and we saw of her. I mean, the odds aren't with her.
No, they're not with her. Have you seen her wrestle?
Ashley Flair, I've not had the opportunity to see her wrestle. I don't even know what company she's wrestled for if she has.
Yeah, I mean, do you agree with me, though, that that FCW doesn't have a great track record here of developing people that become very good, you know, at the next level?
You know, I look at the way FCW is constructed, and it seems like it should be able to pump out performers. When you compare it to Ohio Valley, there are drastic differences. Ohio Valley was on regular tours, and superstars like Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle and the Acolytes and the Dudleys, regular names from World Wrestling Entertainment, made stops in Louisville, Kentucky to wrestle these up-and-comers. And hopefully with the rebranding of NXT and something else that needs to happen is these performers need to move on to something else, these Richie Steamboats in these Seth Rollins and Dean Ambroses. If they sit around the developmental for years, they're going to just regress and eventually get cut. When this talent, you can do something with.
Yeah, it makes me kind of mad that my father was not a professional wrestler, because maybe I would have made it then.
Well, you know, I mean, you would have made it to a certain level, David, but, I mean, Richie Steamboat is a perfect example. His father was intelligent enough to tell him, don't go directly to WWE, get some legs under you. He wrestled extensively in Japan and on the independent scene for a year or two before he went to FCW, so he had an idea of what he was doing in the ring, and unfortunately, he's beginning to regress. If you look at his NXT footage, he's not as good as what he was a year and a half ago, and at this rate, if you're regressing, are you ever going to get called up to the main roster? It's just unfortunate, David. Wild card topic number two. Speaking of Florida Championship Wrestling, should they run a show every WrestleMania weekend? David, this is a perfect opportunity to display this talent, in my opinion. JTG is complaining about his payoffs at WrestleMania. You get the talent who wrestles predominantly on the house shows, and you run one big FCW show, and guess what, David? The talent's already in town. I know you've been to a lot of WrestleManias. I know you've seen the developmental guys there. Have one or two developmental shows that weekend, Friday or Saturday, at a small arena, and use the guys who wrestle on the road but may not be wrestling on TV, put them against the developmental guys. If you draw 300 or 400, maybe 500, isn't that good? Isn't that something more that can be done?
Here's the thing, though. I mean, are we, it seems like we're kind of moving towards one weekend that features WrestleMania, but every other company is going to be working in that same town because they know the whole wrestling universe is there. I mean, would FCW get lost in the shuffle? And is WWE nervous about doing that, Alex, because now you're pulling people away from the access sessions? Those access sessions are not cheap. They cost a lot of money to go to them. And, you know, you got the Hall of Fame, you got, you know, these other things going on. Are they worried about pulling people from higher paying events?
You know what, that's always a potential too, David, but people like me, I've never attended an access, and I know others who haven't either. You know, you want someone to be given the option of, would you rather spend more money on WWE vice going to one of these WrestleCon events? Ultimately, especially this WrestleMania, David, there's going to be a multitude of wrestling fans, and I think you have to give them the opportunity to see this talent. It's not going to be for everyone. I mean, spring training is available for fans to go see live, and how many people do you think go see the Boston Red Sox or the Washington Nationals in their spring games? Not many. But you want to give the fans opportunities to see the upcoming talent if they can.
So these Florida Championship Wrestling shows, you're saying that they would have, like, main roster WWE stars performing on them?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a multitude of main roster guys who are not going to be used during WrestleMania or WrestleMania weekend. And sure, put them against the developmental guys, because how are the developmental guys going to get any better if they only wrestle developmental guys? You let them wrestle against guys who have been on the main roster, like JTG and like Tyler Rex and Curt Hawkins. And some of these guys, Zack Ryder, for example, who aren't being used well on television, and Christian. Why isn't Christian and developmental working with these guys every weekend? Clearly, they have no role for them on television.
Last from the past. Now, this Sunday is the 25th anniversary of SummerSlam, and I mean, it's been 25 fun years. My all-time favorite SummerSlam moment, Alex, was always Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth's wedding, even more so than when Miss Elizabeth ripped off her skirt the very first SummerSlam. I mean, the look on Andre's and DiBiase's face was priceless. But I have to say, I always thought that would be my most favorite. But I have to go back to 2008 when Beth Phoenix and Santino won that intergender match, and she carried Santino to the locker room. They were the two new champions. And I wasn't really into the women's wrestling. I didn't know a whole lot. I was just getting back in, and I thought, she's interesting. And as you know, she became, you know, one of my favorites of all time. I've been a big Beth Phoenix fan since, and a big WWE and a big wrestling fan since. So I wanted to ask you, what are some of your favorite SummerSlam moments going all the way back?
One of my favorite SummerSlams is, I believe, 2005. It had a match on there. It opened up the show between Kurt Angle and Rey Mysterio. That was an incredible match. some moments like Brock Lesnar beating The Rock for the title and Triple H and Shawn Michaels' incredible street fight from the same show. Eddie Guerrero wrestling Kurt Angle at one of the SummerSlams. Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon in the rematch from the ladder match. There's been a lot of incredible matches that take place at SummerSlam. And it's kind of relevant in today's day and age. You know, there was a debate a couple years ago if Survivor Series had lost its luster. And in my opinion, it kind of did. But SummerSlam is still the biggest event in the summer. And it's provided a lot of great memories.
By the way, when I mentioned that my all-time favorite SummerSlam moment for years was the wedding of Macho and Liz, did you know they were already married at the time? I was so out of it, I didn't know that.
You know what, David, I didn't know it at the time, but you know, one of my all-time favorite wrestling moments is when they got back together at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You know, it's insane what you can do when you build up a program for, I believe they were going on 5 years at that point, from the time Macho Man debuted in 85 all the way to 1991. I mean, they built up that storyline, and I don't think they knew that's where it was going to go at the end of it. But, man, it was an incredible ride, was it not, David?
No, it was. It was, absolutely. And listen, this is normally where we would wrap up the show, but I got to get something off my chest before we move on to the finish. Can I do that?
Absolutely, David.
Well, I know that you're an Olympic fan. I'm an Olympic fan, and we just wrapped up the Summer Games. I enjoyed them for the most part. I think it's time, though, to send the NBA players home. And you can say, well, you know, man, they played that game against Spain, and Spain was only down by one in the fourth quarter. I'm not saying that we shouldn't send any NBA players. I would be okay, Alex, if we had something like an under-23-year-old team. Or how about this? One and done. If you play in the Olympics in 2012, you're ineligible for 2016. I would just think it'd be more interesting to send a different group of guys, some college kids and maybe some younger NBA players, than always sending our best team. I know I'm probably in the minority on that. I just find Team USA kind of boring when they're blowing teams out by 80. So, anyway, I enjoyed the Olympics. I'm just very torn on this NBA player thing. And it wasn't that I was rooting for them to lose to Spain, but I kind of wanted Spain to keep it close because I just wanted some good basketball to watch. What I really hope, though, Alex, in closing, is that in the future we get something like a 2-on-2 tournament or a 3-on-3 tournament, which, first of all, who they chose for their partners would be fascinating. And that would be great. And by the way, let's throw in a dunk contest on top of that. We should give a gold medal for that.
I actually disagree with you a lot. But I have one thing that, you know, is I bought tickets recently for a SmackDown Live event here in Reno, Nevada. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I just wanted to know where our seats were. It's the only SmackDown or the only WWE show coming to Reno this year. And we couldn't find out where our seats were. I want to be able to pick my seats when I buy tickets online. I know it can be done because some events let you do it. But now, coming into 2013, we need to make it available for every event. I just want to know where my seats are, and I would love to pick them personally. It's kind of frustrating when you get in the venue and your seats aren't exactly where you thought they were. Very maddening, especially when I know the technology is there.
Well, right, because they do it for airlines.
They do it for airlines, and I've done it for baseball events via StubHub. I mean, I know the technology is there to be able to pick my exact seat. That's all I'm asking, Dave. It doesn't sound like too much. It's not like I'm asking to remove the NBA players from Olympic basketball or anything.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. It's a good thing we're at the end of the show here before we really start to disagree with each other. Right now.
You know, I had asked our producer a couple of weeks ago to start giving us some topics we could disagree on, but we're usually pretty agreeable, I guess. Hopefully the listeners don't mind that.
Yeah, next week we're gonna be more contrarian. All right, well, don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com. to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast, maybe like NBA basketball. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the OWW Facebook homepage. Till next time, I'm David.
And this is Alex.
And we hope you enjoyed the program. We'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.